just like that. Just like that. Just like that.
Welcome to the Coach's Box. My name's Monty, and the next voice you're going to hear is Molly. And we have a special guest tonight, who we also had earlier in the year. You can probably hear his wife in the background cleaning up the dishes. We have Tarquin, but we'll get Molly's opinion first. Molly, I know as you as I would have sat down on Saturday night, and we all enjoyed the hype and the pomp and circumstance around this. This monumental event that was happening on Saturday night, and then we saw an early flurry by the underdog, and then we saw the real star of the show, the professional mob, draw away, and then Barcelona went on to beat Manchester United 3-1. I don't know. Did you see much of the soccer? It seems to me like the soccer is now being played the same way as the AFL is. Barcelona had a forward press in the Manchester United half. They basically played like Collingwood did.
Yeah, I heard someone try and say that the Hawks played a bit like Barcelona did. So perhaps Alistair Clarkson was following them. But, I didn't catch the soccer myself. I did catch the Suns and Carmichael Hunt and his wonderful goal. So, yeah, long weekend.
All right, now, Tarquin, and Mrs. Tarquin in the background, I'm sure she'll put her two bobs worth in, even if not in words, then in the noises if we go on too long. So, Tarquin, how have you been going this week with this year with your dream team?
I'd probably say, for me, I feel like it's been a pretty average year, to be honest.
Average. So, what do you consider an average year? What's your par ranking for a year of a dream team?
Well, I'd probably like to be in the top 1,000 to 500 now, in all honesty.
Mm. Now, there was a bit of conjecture about that. So, how far away from the first spot do you need to be to still think you have a realistic chance of winning it at this stage?
I'd honestly probably say you'd want to be the top 500, and I actually think there's too much commonality amongst the teams, and I think that someone in the top 500 probably has enough trades and the right players and the right bench to probably get them over the line. Someone like Convicts, I think he's got something like 15 trades left in the top 150. He probably won't make too many mistakes, so someone else will be around that level as well, and I think if you're past about 1,000, then you're sort of going for a good score at the moment.
All right, now I haven't got your starting team in front of me, but can you give me a bit of a pricey of your good starting choices and your bad starting choices? What has really shaped your year so far?
Well, unfortunately, the bad things stick in my mind. I'd probably say picking Ryder in the rucks, mistake number one. Listening to the pre-season rumours that Mark Murphy had a knee issue, and selecting Stanton, mistake number two. And mistake number three is not remembering the golden old rule that if a guy's injured in the pre-season, there's a good chance he's going to start slow and his name is Didak. So I think, in all honesty, it's just those three issues. Turn Stanton to Mark Murphy, same cost. Turn, say, Didak into, I don't know, even O'Keefe, you know, save a bit of coin there. And then turn, what was the other spot I had? Ryder into Sandilands. And even turn my Brock McCauley into Zach Smith from the start. And, yeah, I'd say I'd be easily somewhere in the top sort of 200 to 500 right now as well, but that's...
So I guess that was a question in the preseason we were asking ourselves about where is this game going to be won and lost? Is it going to be in nailing the rookies, or is it going to be in nailing the premiums? And it sounds to me, from what you're saying, that you think it was the premiums that you missed out on are the ones that really screwed your score.
Oh yeah, it is. It's, I mean, the rookies. Everyone. I mean, every mug knows the rookies. I mean, I didn't have any rookies that were, wow, oh my God, did he pick that rookie? You know, I just picked things like Swallow, Prestia, Harris, nothing big in those selections. Cracker, Darling, Tapscott, Richardson, Matera. Well, nothing big there.
Now, so what about your mid-prices? Did you go as a lot of fantasy football club coaches did this year with the hardcore guns and rookies, or how many mid-prices did you actually go with to start with?
Just one in Foley, and yeah, he's by the time he started to perform, he was out of my team. So,
you don't count Knights and Petrie? Did you have either of those guys?
Oh, sorry, I had Petrie as well, but right. Petrie was there for more coverage of the rucks, so I always forget him as classified as a mid-pricer. For me, he was a dual position sort of coverage. But I mean, yeah, just simply turning Foley into like a libber at the start of the season when he got named, or I don't know, anyone, someone else, a rookie, and using that extra coin to, I don't know, just turn McCall into Zach Smith and, I don't know, someone else into someone else. We'll just keep the money in the bag. That would have been so much better than starting with Foley and getting his diarrhea in week one and all that kind of stuff.
So I suppose, given that you didn't start with Sandilands, so I presume you haven't got him now?
No. Once I've made the decision to dump Ryder, I can't remember how many weeks ago it was. But, I mean, Zach Smith was sitting there. I thought Petrie was sitting there. Ryder was heading backwards. Bell Chambers and Hill were doing a good job. And Ryder was looking pretty average. And I thought, well, let's get aggressive. Got rid of him and put Zach Smith on the field. And I think he racked up 60s, 100s, 100s. And then Petrie came in there, racked up another 100. So, yeah, I haven't been complaining.
Fair enough.
Not having Sandilands.
So, what are you aiming for? So, what are you ranked now, and what are you aiming for at the end of the year?
2,700 or 2,500-ish, I am. I'm going for a top 100. I mean, in all honesty, I'd be disappointed if I don't finish in the top 100, but at the moment, maybe a top 500 might be a touch more realistic.
Well, this is the thing with these experienced, successful coaches, Molly, is that they have high expectations. I would be ecstatic with 2,500 in my ranking at the moment. I don't know about you, Molly. I noticed that you, Molly, was it you who passed Dr. Dream Team this week? Or actually, it might have been Warnie. I think you passed him the week before, didn't you?
I passed him the week before. Yeah, I sent him the advice. I sent him some advice in pitcher form on Monday. I don't think he took the advice.
No, he's not taking advice very well at the moment. He was a bit sniffing towards me as well. It's sad to see a once good team ruined by trading, I suppose.
Yeah. So now, what did you call him during the week? He said he was using what strategy was that?
I think it was. I think I called him Dr. Crab Team. That was. Yes. He didn't take too kindly to that. That was a bit of a low blow on my part, I suppose. But anyway, all right. Now I'm sure we'll get both Tarquin and Molly's opinions on the round review. We'll probably save the Swan discussion for when we get to Collingwood in the round review. That's obviously the big issue of the week. But we'll start with the Melbourne and Carlton game on the Friday night. Now, we spoke about Michael Evans last week, but seeing as he's on the bubble this week, I suppose we'll have to go to him again. Now, Tarquin, both myself and Molly were talking about him last week, and I labelled him the new Jackson Barham, that he was a ball magnet, but he sprayed it terribly. Now, he saluted this week with a fairly average score, nowhere near his first week's scores, 12 possessions, 4 clangers, and 50% disposal efficiency. Now, given that he did have a wonderful week one score, now do you completely discount that now? Do you see him as being one of those players that because he's at that 80,000 rookie price, that he's just too tempting to get, even though you know his job security is so poor and his scoring ability is so poor?
I wouldn't even be considering him in the slightest. Even after week 100, he could have even scored another 100 this week and I wouldn't consider him. He looks pretty average, and you've got things like Trengrove, Scully. You've got a whole heap of Melbourne players that should be coming back in. And at the end of when you're starting to downgrade at this point in time in the season, they're becoming like bench keepers as such. So you can't treat them as cash cow. Like how much cash they're producing is irrelevant. Like I couldn't care if they produced $200,000 for you, because at the end of the day, you want them to be there at the end of the season. In those multi-buy rounds coming up and with a late season resting chaos. So I wouldn't even consider him because I think he'll be out of the team once a couple of the Melbourne better players return.
So, Molly, you're on board with that, with Scully and Trengove, and there's a couple of... Well, I mean, apparently, was it 7 or 8 of the... Or depending on who you speak to, 7, 8 or 9 of the Melbourne top 22 are out at the moment. Do you see Evans as highly expendable?
Yeah, I mean, he might hang in for a few more weeks, but you couldn't see him playing long-term, and it's just too much risk. Unless you really need that extra 12K or 18K that you would get by going to Mzungu instead, I can't see any reason to pick him up. I don't think he's going to make you a lot of money. I mean, I don't think anyone's got enough trades left to be thinking of... well, I mean, some do, but not many have enough trades to be thinking about getting someone in now who they'll be downgrading later on.
All right. On the Carlton side of that game, now Jeremy Laidler, of course, is now out for 2 to 3 weeks with an injury. Nick Dygan had a shocker. This has been the pattern with these two, that very rarely they both scored the same sort of score. Laidler was the one who was up and Dygan was the one who was down in this game. Dygan presumably will be the one who'll survive and keep playing. With Ed Kerner to come back in, there's probably Brett Thornton seems to be, even though at the start of the year you wouldn't have thought that he might get games at this stage of the season, he seems to have cemented his spot just for the moment. Dygan is, as Tiltray says in the chat, that he's listed as a test in the injury list. Is it time to get rid of both of these players, Molly? Given that Laidler is going to miss a couple more weeks, I mean, I was one of many who traded Laidler out before his bye, and then saw him pretty much score the same as Heath Shaw, who replaced him in my team in the 2 weeks that after his bye. So that was a bit of a fail on my part. And Dygan, I suppose Dygan has been one who some coaches have been hoping would be a long term keeper. Is his time done as well?
I think if you haven't got any other keepers, or those rookie keepers left, like Lower or someone like that, you could hang on to him as you're hoping to get him out as your eighth back. But I think you would be hoping to upgrade him if you've still got him in your side, or I'm not sure if there's any defensive rookies around, but you might want to downgrade him as well. I mean, he's earned a lot of cash, and you could get him out and use that in your midfield or forwards if you're looking for trades there.
Now, Tarquin, did you have either of Dygan or Laidler? It seems like most teams had one of them, if not both of them.
Yeah, I had Dygan from the start, and I kept him through that buy round. Thought he still had a bit more coin to make. I had pressing issues other places, so, and I was the plan with Dygan was to see how the Duffield Broughton situation was going, because I thought they're going to be pretty close, you know, within sort of 60k, 50k, depending on how everything went, and sort of I see that we're going to get into that Broughton and Duffield a bit later, so I won't go too much in detail with it, but yeah, so I thought I was going to see how those Broughton Duffields went, so I thought keep Dygan in there. He'll have his ups and downs, but I'll upgrade my midfield, and I was doing things like Harris to Selwoods and things like that instead. And I'm now moving into the backline section of my upgrades, and I think there's a few bargains floating around there. So yeah, I'll consider upgrading Dygan in this week. In all honesty, I'm probably upgrading him.
All right, we'll move on to the North Melbourne Sydney game. Now, normally I have a very large amount of trouble trying to figure out North Melbourne players to speak about, but we're going to go with Roo Chu. There's going to be at least three players we're going to talk about from North Melbourne this week, Molly. Now, the first of these is Brent Harvey. Now, of course, he's coming up to a milestone game. I believe it's his 311th, which is breaking the club record. I believe that's right.
Yes.
Or at least equaling it. And they're choosing to celebrate it this week as opposed to next week, which is when he actually breaks it, which is, of course, an interstate game. Now, of course, he scored his worst fantasy score of the year on the weekend, and has actually dropped in average about 5 points in Dream Team. He's about the same in Supercoach. But do you believe Harvey is actually a fantasy scorer over the second half of the season? Is he going to have to be forced by this media pressure by Dermot Brereton and others to become more team-oriented and not you know, score a lot of points himself, or is he going to remain the same old Brent Harvey?
I wouldn't have thought so. I think he'll remain his normal self. And, I mean, history says over the last couple of years, every time he has a bad performance, he puts in a big performance afterward. And coming up against the Crows, you know, if you're looking for a forward, he could be just the sort of guy that you'd need in there, especially with his midfield eligibility as well. If you put Mzungu in the midfield and him up forward, you know, that could be a nice little matchup there. And it's probably not unique, is he? He's in a lot of sides, so could cover off other teams if that's what you're looking to do. If you're playing for league wins or eliminator wins, it could be a cover off teams in that sense.
Now, Tarquin, I'll ask you about Daniel Pratt. Now, he's out for a month with an injury. Did you get on either the bandwagons of Daniel Pratt or Brady Rawlings, as a lot of coaches seem to have done?
I've had a passing half-second thought about Pratt, and then I just said to myself, you're just crazy getting on those. They remind me of, what was that other North Melbourne player from a couple of years ago that exploded?
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot what
his Harding. Name.
Harding, yeah.
Lee Harding, people, yes, right.
Yeah, people jumped on him, and it's like, it's I don't know, I think it's fool's gold at times, you know.
So if someone has Pratt now, do they, I mean, the presumably they would have got on 3 or 4 weeks ago, do they get off again now?
Oh, yeah, I mean, cut your ties, I mean.
Yeah.
The guy still shanks the ball as well, I mean, he's hideous.
Anyone who got on him is a bit of looking like a bit of a prat themselves, aren't they?
Now, Molly, I'll ask you, does the Pratt injury leave the door open for everyone's favourite 10th midfielder, Cameron Richardson? Because apparently he's been doing okay in the seconds.
Well, it may well do. He's a back, isn't he? So
yeah, I mean, as I think I might have said last week or the week before, Richardson's job security has basically been zero for the last couple of weeks, because with Pratt and Rawlings and McMahon pretty much playing that sort of small forward, small backman role, there's no room for Richardson. So unless Richardson is going to play on the wing, which I doubt, because they've got enough wingmen as it is. So presumably there is a spot there for Richardson or Richardson type. I don't know whether it would be McMahon going back and then. There'd be another role for a, you know, I don't know, maybe they'd move Wells back there, for instance. But I'm not quite sure what the thinking of the coaching staff will be. But, I mean, if Richardson is going to play, that'll be the role he's going to play. So I presume we've seen you know, VFL form getting rewarded recently, so he's had good VFL form. But I guess the question is, if he does come back, can he actually get his break-even of mid-40s? Because that's basically what he's been scoring when he's actually been in the team.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's going to struggle to do that. I mean, I think in the last game against Richmond, from off the top of my head, he was the sub, so that hurt him a lot. But I think he can. He has that possibility if he can regain that pre-season form he showed. I guess the other guy that the chat mentioned, and just, I don't know what he's done, if he's ran into Scott's car or whatever, is Pedersen, who, you know, came out, had 100, had a really good game in the ruck first up, and has struggled to get back in since. So, I guess
I'd see Pedersen as a tall defender. He's more likely to replace Grimer. You know, he's one of the third, he's one of the three talls rather than one of the three smalls, which I'd consider Pratt and Richardson. So, Tarquin, would you agree with that analysis, that it's Richardson for Pratt as a like for like, not Pedersen?
Yeah, I'd probably say Richardson. I think Pedersen adds too much more height to the North Melbourne side. And I hope for my own sake that Richardson doesn't play ever again this season, because I don't want to reward those people that managed to keep him in his forward 10 spot.
Well, I'm holding my hand up and waving it, because I'm one of those people, so yes.
Congratulations if he does come back in. And I think if he does play and he doesn't run around in circles like a headless chicken, I think he's got potential to score quite well. So,
Chilraise on the chat does point out that Michael Ferrito's out, but I believe that's only for this week for a suspension. So I suppose we'll see Richardson at least for this week, I'd imagine. But then we'll see after that. Now, on to the Fremantle-St Kilda game. We'll stay with you, Tarquin. Tendai Mzungu, is he going to be in the winning team? Or, you know, how many of those top 100 teams do you think Mzungu is going to be in? Because I feel like it's going to be the vast majority of them.
100. Mm. I mean, I cannot see why anyone would not pick him. I mean, it's just the guy, when he played in the Waffle, he's a ball magnet. I mean, just, and he's actually got better skills than he's actually shown recently. He's coming back from an injury. He's a lock. I mean, I cannot. It's got to be a mountain of players. He's got his DP listed, I'm pretty sure, as well. Mm. You can downgrade him in the midfield, the forwards. You've got your Darlings, you've got your Tapscots, you've got your Matiras, you've got your Harrises, Swallows. You've got a litany of sort of cash cows looking to be downgraded. I mean, I could not see how everyone's not jumping on board. I mean, it's going to be a mad rush from Zungu this week.
Now, Molly, I have the problem that I have a kitty of $450,000. Well, actually, $445,000, if I must be correct, must be exact. But so I feel like I want to actually make excuses not to get Mzungu in this week, because I don't want to keep another, you know, quarter of a mil on the pine, not earning money for me. So, I've been loading up on money getting rookies in recently. Is it imperative that I get Mzungu in, or can I afford to leave him out?
Well, if you've got someone you want to trade out, it probably, like, it is, if there's someone in that sense. I would still do that, even if you were planning on an upgrade. I think he is that good that, assuming he doesn't get injured again, he's going to be a very handy backup, and you know, you'll make money, but not that that's really important at this stage, but he'll be a good backup. And with his dual position, you know, it allows you to do a bit of, you know, switching around as well. So, you know, I think you do have to seriously look at him and consider putting your trades off a week. You know, is there by putting it off a week, does that play into your hands at all with some other people's prices and
yeah,
the likes?
I mean, I could certainly see getting. I mean, if I'm looking at, say, Ablett and Chapman, I could certainly wait a week on Chapman, because his price. I mean, if he scores another 90, he'll go down another 10 grand, for instance. So that's certainly possible. But yes, I'm getting enough criticism as it is for having enough that much money in my kitty to start off with. So at this point of the season, so I do feel like I want to get rid of it as soon as possible. But yes, it's a decision that a lot of coaches will have to make. All right, now still on Fremantle. Yeah, sorry.
Monty,
yep.
I want to have a go at you with that. Stockpiling so much money. You knew Mzungu was going to be a downgrade option. Surely at some. One of those trades in the last 2 weeks should have been an upgrade instead of another double downgrade or something along those lines.
Well, my reasoning was, I saw that first week from Mzungu, and I wasn't actually all that sold on his... I mean, I know he's going to be a fine player, but I was actually half thinking that he was going to turn into a Mitch Wallace in terms of him not actually being that great a cash cow. Because while Wallace is scoring okay now... He took a long time to get going, because he was playing roles. Now, at the time that Mzungu came in, Broughton and Duffield were not scoring all that well, and that back line really wasn't functioning all that well. Now, the advent of Mzungu now is, I don't know whether you could say that it's, you know, revitalised that back line, but he's certainly providing a lot of run that wasn't there previously, that Broughton and Duffield are now scoring... decent numbers. Freo has been losing a lot in those games. Let's put it that way. I don't know whether that's actually going to continue. Whether, you know, when Freo's form turns around, is Broughton and Duffield going to turn back into the disappointments they were when Freo was winning earlier in the season? That's a question. But I had this feeling that Mzungu was going to start playing roles, and like Wallace was, because we know Wallace is a fine young player. And Mzungu is also a fine young player. I had the feeling he might, you know, do a Josh Toy and get given a lockdown role and score a 20 here and there. That was my concern.
Yeah, but did you completely forget all the pre-season conversation about what kind of player Mzungu was, you know? I mean,
we said the same things about Wallace, and he turned out to be pretty poor to start off with.
Oh,
so.
Come on. But if you're,
no,
you're
I don't know.
You're comparing a mature-age Mzungu to a Wallace that's a kid. It's you can't compare the two players. I mean, they're completely different roles, different teams. I mean, Mzungu.
Well, what about Toy though? Toy, you wouldn't have thought was a lockdown small defender. Yet they played him like that. I believe it was in the Port Adelaide game. They played him as a lockdown small defender.
Yeah, but that's. I mean, That's Gold Coast. They're kids. I mean, you're still messing with comparing an 18-year-old kid with, you know, a 20-plus-year-old waffle player that dominated in the waffle with 40-plus possessions on some occasions. You know, I mean, and Mzungu, just the fact that he came, you know, no waffle game, he came straight back into the team. That to me was just said, okay, this guy's Harvey's legit. He wants this guy in this team. So,
well, he did come in with a subs best on and only played a quarter though. So, I mean,
it doesn't matter. He still came into the team. You know, he skipped waffle. I mean, he could have got four quarters playing the waffle, but you know, Harvey said, no, I'm happy. I think you've got a decent fitness base. I'm going to give you a quarter, give you a chance, and then see how you go. But
I explained last week that last couple of weeks that I thought that now was the time to be getting a bunch of rookies, and maybe I haven't got enough rookies. Maybe I need to get Mzungu as my last, you know, rookie, as you know. So I may end up doing that this week. So and I may end up losing 50 points out of it, for instance. But I'll gain a bit of money for upgrades later, and hopefully make it back later on. By being able to reach higher than I would have otherwise. So yeah, it's a balancing act, I suppose. But yes, in the short term it's going to look bad, but hopefully in the long term it'll pay off. But
I think you made the mistake maybe two weeks ago in not doing an upgrade at that point,
I did do an upgrade in terms of getting Shaw in. So I did actually get rid of Laidler for Shaw 2 weeks ago.
So what was it last week? You did two downgrades, was that?
Yes, that's right.
And who was that? Jacobs and...
Who was it? I'll have to look that up now, won't I? and the other one who was on the bubble, who was...
Lynch,
that's right, yes.
Okay, they're not terrible. So I guess I can cut you some slack, but...
Oh, good, I'm glad you're cutting me some slack, Tarquin, on my own show. You're giving me a free pass, that's excellent.
Okay. To be fair, there have been a lot of good rookies come up in the last month. Mm. And, I mean, even this week, I can see, if he's fit, Smith coming back in this week, who's on the bubble as well, Isaac Smith from Hawthorn. So, you know, that's another guy who I was hoping to get in that I'm probably going to miss, because I'm not going to do two downgrades. I'm going to do an upgrade and a downgrade this week.
Mm. Now, sticking with you, Tarquin, since you are over in the West, the Broughton Duffield, are they back? That was the question I had in my mind going into this week. Is this renaissance of Broughton and Duffield a flash in the pan? I noticed Duffield has actually averaged 87 over the last 5 weeks, so with him it's not been a singular renaissance. Broughton perhaps has been poorer recently, but they both scored an even 120 this week, which is, you know, all that you want. Is this just a fact of Fremantle getting beaten, and so there's so much ball going into that back line, or what's the reason for their resurgence?
I think it's a bit of everything. You know, I think you can't, good players eventually find ways to score, and I mean Duffield has been flicking between forward and back, actually. I mean, I noticed you actually use that cool little symbol of yours on your game day, and he's been moving forward, wing, back, so he's been released a bit more. So, and the worst thing is, they're both a bit below 300k. They're guaranteed best 22. They're proven scorers before. They're going to trend towards their average. I think they're absolute bargains at the moment, so I think they're back. They might not be 120-point scorers, but I think you can lock in 80-plus from both of them, I'd say, for the run home. And the only issue with Freo players, which, I mean, depends if you're doing league or overall, is you've got to remember they've got that multi-buy, so, I mean, that's the one slight issue with bringing in Freo players. But other than that, I think they're back and jump on board.
Now, Molly, if I was doing an upgrade in the backs this week, I'd have a choice of getting in either Suckling, who apparently I'm banned from getting in, according to you. But I could get the absolute cream of the cream, in for instance, Heath Scotland, who is averaging 98, is fully priced at 390, or I could go one of these Frio boys. Now, how many points do you think I'd be losing out getting Scotland at... I mean, do you think I'll be losing that full 20 points a week 100 versus 80, or I mean, is it worth getting one over, getting the, you know, paying full price for Scotland, or do you think I should go for value if I'm looking in that area?
Well, I mean, it depends how the rest of your side's looking, but I would have thought at this point in the season you'd be going for the best of the best. I mean, depending on what you've done with the rest of your back line. So, you know, if you've got a few risks there in other places, then that's what I would be doing, is going for the best of the best in that position. But, you know, these guys are lowly priced, and if you think that they are going to, you know, bounce back, then that's a good thing to look at them. But, I mean, it is a bit of a worry that, you know, their good performances, especially Broughton's, has come in bad performances for the team. I mean, to me, that's a bit of a worry that, you know, whatever role they've been released into isn't a good role for the side.
I've got you doing it now, Molly. I'm reminded on the chat by Heavy that it is Broughton, not Broughton. But it's just, I had a friend when I was a kid whose last name was Houghton. And so that, I think that's why I do that. But I should really remind myself every time. It's Broughton, not Broughton. Anyway, on the St Kilda side of that game, Tarquin, Nick Del Santo, obviously, even in the big win against Melbourne the previous week, he didn't do so great. Now, he's had 2 weeks in that new role at halfback, one for his lowest score of the season, well, second lowest score, I should say, and one for his equal third highest score of the season. Do you think it's actually going to be good for his scoring? I mean, I know Del Santo is traditionally a Supercoach specialist, but he's, I mean, even the inestimable Dr. Dream Team actually picked Nick Del Santo in Dream Team this year. So do you think that was a mistake, or is he going to score like a champion in the second half in that halfback role?
I think Nick Del Santo still has that issue of you tag him and he goes missing, so. Minus Lenny Hayes, he might even get a sort of a forward tag on him, and he'll go to water again. So, and in saying that, any player that moves to the back line, it never really increases your scoring too much. Midfield, that's where you churn your scores out, and I just think, you know, the coaches might see what he did to Fremantle, providing run and carry, they'll just forward tag him. And, yeah, he'll go back to his old, you know, popping a 60 or 70 here and there. And not the kind of player you kind of want, where you sort of, in the midfield, you want your Mark Murphys and maybe your Selwoods and all those kind of thing. And maybe at a long shot, maybe an Ablett if you're a bit crazy, I think. But, yeah, I don't think you'd want a Nick Del Santo in my eyes, to be honest.
Now, Molly, I remember there was one inside midfielder close to our hearts who moved to the back line and became a fantasy premium. And that, of course, was Sam Mitchell. Can you see Nick Del Santo doing the same thing as Sam Mitchell, or is he a too different a type of player?
Yeah, I mean, he could score well back there, but I'm just not confident in it myself. I think it's too many variables and question marks, and, you know, what's going to happen as they're working through their style issues. And I mean, he's got a really bad run as well with Collingwood, Bulldogs, who, you know, might be starting to get back to a little bit of form, and then Geelong before a bye. I think it would be a bad time to bring him in myself into your midfield. You're probably looking at only having one Saint in there, and, you know, you've probably already got Goddard in your back line and Nick Rewald up forward. I think it's too much exposure. I would be staying away from him myself.
Mm. All right, we'll move on to the Gold Coast and Geelong game. There's two types of Sun players I wanted to speak about here. Molly, we'll stay with you. Now, I was very happy, as obviously all of his owners, who started Danny Stanley on the weekend with a high 90-odd, although he did fall away in the second half. I know a lot of coaches also started Thomas Lynch. And Sam Miles is another one who might have been started in a fair amount of leagues this week. Now, they scored... my reasoning for starting Stanley over Jacobs, as I did, was I thought Gold Coast would be up for their first home game, and certainly they were. But they're going to be dragged out back down to earth this week at the wide expanses of Subiaco. How startable do you think those three are, Stanley, Lynch and Isles? Because they're on the cusp of startability. Do you think they're actually startable on Subiaco?
Yeah, not... I wouldn't like Lynch. I mean, I think the West Coast back line is pretty good, so I'd have my doubts on Lynch, so I'd probably write him off. And Stanley and Isles, I mean, Stanley as well, you know, again, the forward press that the West Coast have put into place could come into play with Stanley, although he's been playing up forward a lot, so, you know, that's going to play into it. But and Isles, I hadn't seen a lot of Isles, and I did like what I saw, so he might be, you know, startable, but, you know, the way teams are looking with their midfields at the moment, other dream teams, you really want to start to get towards six premium midfields, or at least having a Swallow or a Harris or a Libba or Kerno or someone, probably even those guys are starting to be a bit inconsistent. So really need to be getting towards that six midfield premiums at about this time of the season.
Now, Tarquin, I presume you have a fair amount of multi-positional cover in your team. I suppose a lot of coaches will, and they'd be looking at you know, Dane Swan's injury and saying, well, okay, who am I going to have to start in Dane Swan's absence while he's away for his 2 weeks, obviously one of them being the bye and the other one being the Arizona one. And it's going to be players like Danny Stanley and Thomas Lynch and Sam Isles who actually have to start scoring in those weeks if you haven't got, you know, much other cover, because, you know, a player like Jacobs or Hibbard would cover in the centres, and effectively you'd be playing a Stanley or a Lynch instead of Dane Swan. So, I mean, can you actually stomach 2 weeks of these guys without the Swan, or are you is that just too little scoring for you?
No, I don't think you've got much option for most people at this point in time. I think Danny Stanley's my sort of sixth defender at the moment. So yeah, I'm not, beggars can't be choosers at the moment. So I'll be definitely having like people like Isles, Jacobs, Hibbard, and those kind of guys sort of being my constant replacements. I've got even Cracker, I've got floating around, I think, sort of mid seven. Got sort of Jacobs as sort of mid eight, and Heppel, so I've got sort of multiple players rotating through there. So Danny Stanley's fine. Lynch, he might be a bit more of a last resort for me. Those sort of power forwards, they can go up and down. I prefer your midfielder kind of sort of guys like your Danny Stanley's and your Isles, kind of Jacobs, those sort of midfielder rookies. They have it. At worst, they normally often score, you know, your 50, 60s, sort of your 60-ish kind of points, where a Tom Lynch, he could come out and, like a Charlie Dixon, you know, not take a mark or a grab.
Yeah, now, I see Lynch as a better player than that. Dixon is a bloke who could stand on the goal square and score you 15, whereas Lynch I see much more as a darling type. He'll zone up on the wings. When I say he's a darling type, I mean darling is trying to play like Nick Riewoldt. He's trying to get up on the wings and be that link bloke to get plus sixes. Plus also he tackles, which is something that Riewoldt doesn't do a whole lot of. But I see Lynch at least having that part of darling's game, that he does, you know, get up on the behind the wing and does provide that link role that Riewoldt does from halfback through the midfield to the forward line. So I'm actually a bit more bullish about Lynch as a starter as I am about Stanley. But so on the other side of that coin, we have three Suns who were in the bottom four of scoring in that game against Geelong. Brandon Matera, who has really dropped away in the last two or three weeks, with the rise of Stanley has come the fall of Matera in that small forward role. Dion Prestia, his owners have just been they've had to suffer so long without him, and then he comes back and he's got the subs vest on and he basically kills his... I mean, the reason that the coaches have been keeping him for all this time was his low break-even, and now he's delivered 27, and basically his break-even's now mid-70s. So he's all of that, the reason you've been keeping him has just dissipated completely now. You only got another 11,000 out of him. So that must be soul-destroying. And then Daniel Harris, of course, has had bereavement issues and also supposed injury issues, and his scoring now has dried up as well. So all three of these guys, are they trade bait now? We'll go with you, Molly.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Matera is injured, isn't he? And Prestia not doing that well, and Harris, as you say, putting in the poor performance. But I think he's of the three, he's the one who I'd be more likely to hold on to than the other two. I think he can bounce back, whereas the other two, you know, Matera is a good-looking player, but with the injury, he's just time to get him out. And Prestia, yeah, again, as you say, I was one of those owners who held on to him because of his low break-even and lower price. So I think this week's the week I'm going to get rid of him. So I think he's done his dash, and you know, that big break-even just makes him not worth hanging on to at the moment.
Now, Tarquin, Matera, I feel like he, as well as Reece Conker, who a lot of coaches would still have, I feel like they're deprioritised because they're not going to lose you any money, so you don't need necessarily for them to be the first ones out, whereas a player like a Darling, you know, obviously will play this week and he's in danger of losing money and you might want to trade him out. So would you trade a Matera out over a Darling because they're much the same price and keep Darling as cover? I suppose it does depend on what your side structure like.
It's probably a great question because last week that was my decision. It was, do I trade out Tapscott that was injured, Matera, or Darling? And I actually chose to go Darling down to Lynch just to free up a lot more cash. So then luckily enough for me, I went from Harris to Selwood. My logic was behind it was basically, A, to produce a lot of cash so I could afford Selwood. And then B, it was also Tapscott wasn't going to go down in price, and I had a forward plan that Tapscott would eventually become Mzungu anyway. So I knew that Darling might come down in price, and I wasn't going to play him on the field anyway. And Matera, basically, he's going to be my, at the moment, he's my 9th, 10th forward, and he'll have his ups and downs. I think he probably deserves a rest. He's a very light on guy, but you know that he'll potentially play quite a few games in the coming for the remainder of the round, so he'll have a bit of a rest. But I've just kept Matera. But I mean, if I still had Darling and Matera now, it all depends on who I want to upgrade and what other cash cows I was going to be doing. But I mean, as I said, I chose to release Darling and get a lot more. Cash, and yeah, I've got a slightly weaker forward, but I think Lynch can roughly score like you were saying, like a Darling anyway. So I didn't see it as a massive loss. So yeah, I went for the lot of cash, so I could have that powerful six powerful midfielders at the moment.
All right, now Molly, on the Geelong side, I think we talked last week about how you had a week of grace to have a look at Zach Smith. So if you wanted to trade out Sandilands, you could have a look at and see what Smith's scoring was going to be like against, you know, one of the... I mean, admittedly, he was only playing Nathan Vardy, but Vardy himself now becomes a valid downgrade target because he is on the bubble this week. After getting knocked over early by Carmichael Hunt, he came back and scored a very creditable 70. So the possibility now exists this week for Sandilands owners to go Sandilands down to Vardy and put Smith on the field for the foreseeable future. So, I mean, Vardy, obviously, we've got Brad Alton's possibly coming back this week. He's listed as a test on the injury list. How viable is Vardy as a... Well, I suppose it'd have to be now a third ruck if you've got, you know, Tippett as your fourth to enable the dual positioning with Petrie.
Yeah, I don't like that myself. I think that if you've got that cover already, unless you really have issues elsewhere and you want that cash from Sandilands, I would be just hanging on to Sandilands and using your cover because, you know, the chances are that Sandilands is going to come back and go back to being the best scoring or close to best scoring ruck again, and you're going to want to get him back. So you've used two trades, one to get him out and get some cash and one to get him back in. So, you know, I just don't like that at all. You know, we don't know how long Smith's viability as the backup is going to hold. I would rather wait and keep using Smith and wait and see if he has an injury or is rested before I started looking at bringing in other rookies who, you know, who knows how long they're going to be in. It just doesn't seem like a good use of a trade myself unless you need that cash.
Now, Tarquin, I've heard a lot of coaches, evidently you're not in the position yourself, but I've heard a lot of coaches saying, I can't have Petrie and Smith and Sandilands with one of them, you know, with all that money on my bench, I have to get rid of one of them because there's just too much money to be wasting on the bench. Do you think that's a bit of a waste of a trade, or is the money too much, you know, that you get out of going to a Vardy from a Sandilands? Is that too much money that you feel like you have to cash in on at this stage?
In all honesty, because I don't have Sandilands, I want everyone to keep Sandilands on the bench for my sake. All honesty, if I had Sandilands right now, he'd be gone. You can't sit there and have Zach Smith. He's been my ruck for a couple of weeks. He's been cranking out hundreds.
Mm.
Then you've got Petrie. If you've got Petrie as an option, if you had Smith and Petrie and Cox, I do not see why you need Sandilands. I'd be dropping him down and then using that. Sandilands is out for 4 weeks. Then they've got a bye. That's 5 weeks without scoring. Then just say he comes back. There's a highly likelihood that Griffin or Zach Park will probably tag team with him to help him ease through. He might even get rested. He's that important to the Fremantle. Fremantle will make the finals. They can't have Sandilands going there injured. He might start slowly. His fitness base might have dropped down. The guy's got size 20, 25 feet or something. That toe's massive. That causes him to run the game less. Oh, I can see him, say, average scoring 90s. And then Zach Clark can do sort of 80s. Or Petrie can do 80s, 90s. What's the point in sitting there having all that cash sitting on your bench for? I think it's crazy people considering keeping Sandilands on the bench. In all honesty,
I'm glad after before you started that little rant, Tarquin, that you did do a financial disclosure. You're obviously highly compromised in this Dream Team cash for comment scenario, but. I suppose people can take what you say with that grain of salt, and they know your pecuniary interest in this issue. But now, so specifically on Vardy though, what do you like to his job security? It was mentioned in the chat by Tiltraise that it might actually be Hawkins who gets taken out for Ottens, and it'd be Vardy who'd be supporting Ottens.
Sorry, yeah, yep. I quite like Vardy actually. I think he's a viable option, but the whole Vardy thing's irrelevant in reality. It's just creating some cash, and if he plays wonderful, you've got four. Congratulations, you've got four rocks to cover the spot. But I mean, at the end of the day, you've got Petrie, you've got Zach Smith, and then you might have Vardy. I mean, if he plays, I mean, I've got Brock McCauley. If he plays, congratulations. If Leuenberger gets his injury passed, come back again, he'll come back. I mean, it's irrelevant. It's just producing the cash. I mean, pick Bailey if you think he's. His three knee reconstructions are fine now. I don't care.
We'll get on to Bailey later in Hawk Talk, I can assure you. We'll get on also in the Geelong team, Molly. So we had no Corey Enright in that team on Saturday night, and the way that they structured it was Menzel went from the forward line to defence, and it was Cowan playing in Menzel's role. So the question obviously has to be, once Corey Enright comes back into the team, as he is going to this week, where the hell do they play both Menzel and Cowan? Because, I mean, Cowan looked like he's off that production line of small forwards that has produced Menzel and Stokes and Duncan, and there's another one there who I'm forgetting. Oh, I always forget. Who's the other one? Who's the other small forward from Geelong I'm forgetting?
Stokes?
No, I said Stokes. There's another one.
Burns?
Burns is the one. Thank you very much, Tarquin. Now, I just can't see they can play all that many small forwards because they've already got Johnson obviously taking up a lot of space down there. And Varco seems to me to be the odd man out. He's had a terrible year. So is it Cowan going to be replacing Varco for the short term, and Varco goes back to playing the VFL? Because I think that'll actually be the best move. Strange to say, because Varco had a wonderful year last year.
I don't think that'll happen. I think although Vardy hasn't been scoring well, and I haven't seen a whole heap of Geelong games, but you know, you hear a lot of good raps on him and the things that he's doing. So I think he'll hang around. I don't think Cowan will hold his spot in the side. I think he'll be out this week, and as you say, Enright will come back in.
All right, now, Tarquin, you said you were a Foley owner to start with. Now, were you one of the ones who held on to him? Because I wasn't. I was one of the ones who traded him out. Were you one of the ones who kept the faith with Foley?
No, I didn't. But, I mean, I got Foley turned into Kerno, so that's freed up, you know, how much cash, I can't remember what it was, say 100K or something like that or so. And Kerno was cranking out hundreds in my team anyway, so... Yeah, I didn't keep him, but if you've got him now, congratulations.
I was going to ask about that because are congratulations in order? Because he's actually only increased his average by 10 points in Dream Team, and actually I know he was discounted, but he hasn't turned into the premium that we might have thought he might have been. He's not averaging what he was in 2009 in his best year. He's still now. Admittedly, that a lot of that is to do with his 24 in round one. But his scoring has been very up and down. He's been scoring probably what's that? 1, 2, 3, 4 of his scores have been or 5 of his scores have been 75 or under, which is not really acceptable for a man that we pay that much money for. Has the Foley experiment actually worked? I feel like looking at his numbers, I just don't want a bar of any mid prices at all next season.
Yeah, but I mean, just forget it. Just imagine if he didn't have diarrhea and all those things, and had that. I mean, if you look at from round 5 onwards, it's 108, 123, 63, not too great, 87, 88, 121. If he started round 1 like he did from round 5, you'd be over the moon. Even if he started round 1 like he did round 3, you would have been over the moon. And it's solid. He was top in the best 21, guaranteed midfield. Richmond should have been improving. You got to discount that. By the time you had to make that Kerno decision, this is what information he had. He had 24 and 55 points. That was terrible.
And now, yeah, it looked shocking as well.
And yeah, as Molly said, it just didn't look good. But if you'd seen him from round 5 onwards, you'd have been patting yourself on the back going, wow, isn't this mid-pricer great? In the best 21, 108, 123, 63, oh, a bit of bad luck, but oh, backs up with an 87, 88, 121. And you're patting yourself on the back thinking, how wonderful are you? So I just think it was just bad luck. I mean, I wish bloody Hardwick disclosed that he had diarrhea, he would have been out of my team instantly. I wouldn't have put up with that, but of course it gives me flashbacks of that fractured foot, Liam Anthony, I think it was. We'll curse the coach for no disclosure. It's like, well, just, you know, be honest with us for once in your bloody life.
Don't mention the fantasy antichrist, which I think we're banning him on this show. But anyway, so I guess the question, Tarquin, is, are you going to be joining the herd, the fantasy footy club herd, of going strictly guns and rookies next year, unless it is a can't miss one like Petrie?
No, I think every year is different. I mean, in all honesty, like, look at Adcock. There you go. That shoots the whole theory out of the water. Fife. You know, I can mention so many names. Fife was highly considered by me. Adcock was considered by me. Foley was considered by me. And Foley has proven. Yeah, Knights, there you go, I considered him as well. Petrie, every single decent mid-pricer, I think that, in my personal point of view, that should have been highly considered, has actually performed really well. Foley proved the point a bit too late, unfortunately. But, I mean, Jesus Christ, if I could have turned Didac to Fife or something, you know, Didac to even Knights, I'd be so much better off.
Oh, no, don't get it down yourself, Tarquin. We can all play those games.
I mean, even Foley was a classic of the mid-price strategy anyway, in that he didn't perform well in the first few rounds. So you had 2 rounds to see this rookie who I liked during the preseason, but I didn't think was going to get a go, who came on hot to start with. So we had an option to downgrade him, and it allowed me to, you know, go somewhere else with that extra cash. So I mean, although I was disappointed with Foley's first 2 scores and it hurt me early, it almost proved that the mid-price strategy works, because I went to Kerno with him and I had that trade to do. So, you know, I don't think that Foley was a complete failure in that disproving the mid-price strategy.
Right, on the Port Adelaide side, I struggled a bit to find a player worth talking about, but I finally settled on Jasper Pittard, Molly. Now, this is a player who was... I don't think he was one of the more popular players chosen in both competitions, but he's turned out to be one of the better long-term cash cows. He's never been scoring like a... You know, he's had one score over 80, so he hasn't been highly startable, apart from a little stretch between rounds 3 and 5, where he got 370 odds and 70 pluses in a row. But I guess, you know, and being a centre, you know, there have been many other centres, because he was classified as a centre, that have been scoring better than that and been more startable. But I guess if you still do have him, he's got a break even of 49 in Dream Team and 69 in Supercoach. I feel like against Carlton, he's got Carlton next and then the bye. So I feel like the bye, you probably would have been getting rid of him just before the bye anyway. But I feel like before that Carlton game, Carlton's been actually shutting down a lot of teams. They, as well as the Hawks, are really the new danger clubs to play against, because the Blues do share it around a lot. Is now the week to get rid of him, or can you stomach another? I mean, does it matter this week, given that even if he does score like his average, he's only going to add another 5,000? I feel like this is a thing we're thinking about with a lot of these cash cows who are now at sort of mid 200,000 price range in Dream Team. That is there much more blood to get out of that stone, or is now the time to, you know, is the structure of your team more important than getting the absolute maximum cash out of a guy like Pittard?
I think absolutely that the structure of your side is the most important thing, and sometimes you do have to move these guys. I mean, if you're looking at Mzungu in the midfield and a midfield upgrade, then of course he's going to be one of the guys who's probably sitting in that situation. I mean, in a way, if you look at his scoring pattern, it's actually not a bad scoring pattern for a midfield for a rookie. I mean, you'd like to see some hundreds, but on the flip side, he's getting you 50 at least a week, and there's a lot to be said about that in a way. So he's had a good season. His scoring reminds me, off the top of my head, of what Otten was the year he came into the league. It was never huge hundreds, but it was never down to the 20s. You know, but as you say, looking at it now, now would be the time you'd be looking to get him out. You know, he's made some extra cash over the last 2 weeks, and you know you're going to make about 150 odd for going to Mzungu. So, you know, that's probably something you should be looking at.
All right, Tarquin, a similar type of player from the Adelaide Brisbane game. Now, Matthew Wright, he was another rookie who started off poorly, like a lot of others did. 27, I believe he had the subs vest on at some point in that game against Port, obviously in the showdown. But his value as a cash cow is basically based around two games. It's mostly based around round 8 in the Suns game, where he scored 116, and to a lesser extent the 83 he got in the Collingwood game the week after. As a general rule, especially looking for next year for the GWS, is the Matthew Wright example, does that make you want to get rookies who are going to play GWS next year at a key point in their rookie season? You know, it was obviously his fourth game that happened, which is the third and fourth games are really important for rookie cash cow, you know, accumulation, because you get the full value for those games. Does that make you think next year you're going to take more notice of when the GWS and to a lesser extent, I suppose, Gold Coast itself appears in a rookie player's game time?
I guess it's if it's a 50-50 decision, then maybe it does. But I mean, often those rookies never come down to those 50-50 decisions. It's like, who's got the best job security, that's how and who's going to pass scoring potential. But often I've found in most years there aren't heaps of 50-50 line ball decisions with regards to rookies. There's quite a few obvious ones, and then you pick the obvious ones with the highest job security and scoring potential. But it would help. I mean, if I had a choice between two, was unsure then, and I saw that one of them had a GWS in round 3, round 4, round 5, I'd be yeah, that'd be a helping decide my decision and split the two. But yeah, otherwise it's not a massive issue for me. But more of those GWS games, like I looked at the back end of the season, and that's helped me with some premiums. I think Hawthorn played, or Geelong or something, playing GWS twice in the back end, so that sort of made me go, well, I need to bring more of these guys into my team.
Fair enough. All right. Now, also, not actually playing in that game, but there's actually a couple of names there who on the Adelaide side who obviously coaches are asking about. I haven't got Andy Otten there on the running sheet. I'll put him on. But Andy Otten and Ian Callinan are occupying a few thoughts this week, Molly, in terms of, is it actually too early to be getting in Callinan? Because, of course, he does have that dual position eligibility with the forwards. And he does, of course, have that bargain basement price of being a rookie. I suppose there's that question about, you know, he is going to be playing Sandville this week, so, you know, he's on the treadmill, and eventually he'll come up into the side. And I guess the question with Andy Otten is, I mean, if he doesn't play this week, when is he going to play?
Yeah, I think Otten, you know, I don't think he was scoring well enough when he was on the park to hang on to him too much longer. I think my gut feel is to say in a lot of sides where teams still have him, it's been a matter of they haven't had the opportunity to trade him out until now or so far. So I know that's been something I had myself for a few weeks until I finally, you know, bit the bullet and had some extra cash to do an upgrade while still trading him out. So, and I think Hibbert was on the bubble at that stage. So I think that's something that people need to look at. But yeah, Cullinan is someone to keep an eye on. And as you say, at the bargain 80K mark, he could be a good, you know, to sit in your ninth spot if you need some cash and don't have a good option in the next few weeks. But at the moment, there seems to be better options around. Like, I mean, if it was this week, you know, unless you already had Mzungu, you'd be looking at Mzungu. So I think it, you know, we've got at least three more weeks and, you know, probably four. So for Cullinan at worst. So I think you can probably wait on him for a few more weeks and see what happens with him and if he's going to play.
Now, Tarquin, what's your methodology for getting in rookies? Are you one who is treats the bubble with a great deal of reverence, that you always want to get in a player just after he's played his second game because you get the maximum, you know, the look at him? Or are you one of those ones who might have taken a Fuopolo or an Isaac Smith, you know, with obviously varying results before they were on the bubble?
Normally, I try and wait till that second game's been played, but every once in a while a certain player comes along and you can take a bit of a risk. And for me this year, I did some forward planning and I saw that there's going to be some downgrade, upgrade in the next couple of weeks. So I had to pick a player that I was going to trust the most, and that was Jacobs. I think he just got named for his first game, and I downgraded straight to Jacobs. Gave me another DP link, and I just knew top five pick. Not top five pick. I rated him as one of the top five players or top 10 players at least. So, and he's going to, and Port was a basket case midfielder, racks up heaps of possessions. So I thought he's going to be a lock. So I brought him in early. Someone like Callinan, I'd wait for him, like, because I'm not, in my heart, I'm not 100% sure how, can't remember the coach now, Neil Craig is going to treat him. Is he a lock? Is he in their best 21? I mean, he treats Walker like crap. He's never been great with his rookies at the best of times. So I'm a bit too scared to go early on someone like him. So
I feel like he's this Hayden Skipworth type of player, where he's not actually all that great a player, but he'll do well if the other bloke kick it to him. But I'm not sure whether they'll actually kick it to him or not. It's a bit of an issue, I suppose. But yeah, so I suppose, Tarquin, given you do have a lot of knowledge about rookies coming down the turnpike, can you actually see any of those can't-miss rookies? Because this is one of the reasons why I wanted to load up on rookies, because I couldn't actually see a whole lot coming down in the second half of the year. Obviously, Callinan's one of those ones that have got a lot of hype. Are there actually that many, you know, rookies who you would actually say, okay, when they're going to play their first game, I want to get him in?
Well, that's like yourself, I was umming and ahhing between whether to get Lynch or not last week. I was like, well, I can actually do an upgrade without even doing a downgrade. I could have gone straight to Selwood and Murphy. I think I had the cash in hand anyway. But I thought, as like you said, I didn't see much on the horizon. So I just thought, well, I've actually got to start producing cash now. And that's why I got rid of Darling down to Lynch, because I knew Mzungu was about the only one left that I could see in the foreseeable future. And but I mean, I see on your running sheet you got Josh Green.
Mm.
I think he might be about the only other option which I kind of trust. And I think, is he playing his third game this week?
Yeah,
or
he's on the bubble, which is why he's on the list. That's right. Yeah. So, but look, I mean, the only one I can see, of course, is Michael Coad, who, of course, when he comes back, will be on the bubble because he only played his second game after he got injured.
Well, actually, someone mentioned it earlier. There's a Carlton guy that's been upgraded, Zach Tui, an Irishman, and he might do a Pierce Hanley, sort of put daggers in your heart there, Monty. But yeah, sorry about that. Mm. But so I think if he gets an extended run, I think he's got a lot more skill and just as hard as maybe an Armfield. I reckon he could be a goer. So I mean, he could be one to keep an eye out. Very highly rated, just wonderful skills. And I'd love to see him have an extended run. So he could be one on the bubble in 2 weeks. And you might just go, well, he'll be my 10th defender and I'll run the risk. And so I'd keep an eye on him. So other than that, yeah, not too much.
So just to explain for the benefit of you, Molly, and the listeners, the reason why Tarquin giggled at the name of Pierce Hanley is because I consulted him early in the pre-season, and I was most vociferously warned off here, Hanley, by a certain coach who remained nameless, and so it's a bit of a sore point with me. But
was he trying to suggest to you that would be a bad process?
Yes, something like that, or yes,
kind of like picking suckling up, you know, that bad process. You know, that kind of...
All right, now we'll move on to those Lions now. The man I had down first there, of course, is Jed Adcock. Now, I don't know, are either of you Jed Adcock owners? I forget.
Yeah, I had him from the start.
And what about you, Tarquin?
No, and I've got a voodoo doll, and it caused a bit of contention on a private forum of mine, and secretly in the back of my head, I was smiling at his low score, and I don't want the guy to be injured, but I wouldn't mind back-to-back 50s.
I completely know the feeling because I had the same feeling about Kuno, and thus it came to pass that, of course, he did get injured. So yes, Molly, I suppose you must have been looking at Adcock and thinking, of course, he played on Taylor Walker, and his scoring in that first half was just execrable. How worried are you that he's going to be playing similar sort of roles in the second half of the season? Surely they can get a centre half back actually to play on a tall like Walker, so he doesn't have to give away, you know, half a foot and 20 kilos to the big monsters like Walker.
Yeah. I mean, I guess in a sense, it's the same idea, but the opposite way, as I said with the Fremantle guys. You know, the fact that he scored a low score playing a role in a winning side probably isn't a good sign for me. But I mean, I think he can. You know, I don't think he'll be doing that too often. He's just too valuable a player in that back sort of midfield role for him to be tied up in that sort of role too many weeks in a row, I hope. But I guess it'll depend on how their side comes together. So we'll monitor it and see how it goes and hope that it doesn't turn into too long a process.
All right, now, Tarquin, it sounds like you're all over Josh Green, so I'll go to you with this question about him and also Matt Austin, who were both on the bubble this week, and Austin's a bit more expensive, but I suppose Green, it sounds like you're a bit of a rat for Josh Green.
Yeah, well, maybe that's another poster on the private forum. Up in his ante a bit. Vossi seems to like his rangers, so I guess... But he is a highly touted player. They're winning. He's part of the winning team. I think they need to build their midfield stocks. So, yeah, I think he's a good shot. I mean, if you're trying to do two downgrades, because if you've already got Mzungu and you're trying to free up some more cash, then I think you could do a lot worse than green, like a guy called Matt Austin. But I mean, I think if you had a choice, you'd definitely go for green. I would.
So I'm just reading up on green from the AFL Records season guide, because I must admit I didn't spend too much time looking at either of them on the weekend. But he's an inside player. He's a stoppage specialist, and he's a Tasmanian, and averaged 25 disposals in the 2010 Under-18 Championship. So he's one of those highly rated juniors that we all keep talking about. So I presume you've been watching him for a year or two now?
Yeah, I've been watching him. He dominated for Tassie, so he's a very good ball winner. Yeah, could have gone quite high in the draft. Maybe some people are saying top 10, so some people could see he's a bit of a catch. Quite a few Brisbane guys definitely weren't complaining when he was selected and called. So I think, yeah. I think Pollock's out for a long period of time, so that's sort of increased his job security a bit. So, I'd jump on board. Don't be scared of that guy.
Boo Pollock. Right. All right, we'll move on to the Collingwood and West Coast game now, Molly. This is the big dilemma. One of those season defining ones. We seem to have one of these every week or two. Dane Swan out for 2 weeks. One of them, of course, being the bye. So of course he's going to go to Arizona for the Queen's Birthday match after this weekend. He'll be out for 2 weeks. Now, of course, in that match that he was missing against Melbourne, Port have the bye that week. So that means that Ben Jacobs will not be able to support you in defence or coming in from the midfield. So that's probably not the worst outcome that could have been, could have coincided with the Swan being out. But can you actually see yourself getting rid of Swan just for 2 weeks? I feel like that's not enough to actually get rid of him.
No, it'd be pretty foolish, I think, to do it for 2 weeks. If you wanted to think that he's not going to recover, and you don't have Pendlebury or Boyd, and you thought they would be better options, then that might be a good reason. But if you're thinking of bringing him straight back in, just hang on to him. The trade is too valuable unless you've got a ton up your sleeve. I couldn't see that being a good move at all.
What about you, Tarquin? Now, I know a mutual friend of ours, Skooks, who I tried to get on the show this evening, it's all his fault because he brought in Swan a couple of weeks ago, and it's actually all his fault for the Chapman owners, because he brought him in and he got immediately injured or at least had a form slump. And Sandilands, he also got in. So it's all Skooks' fault. But I'm sure you're one of the many, many coaches who had Swan from the start, so he's part of your core midfield. So who are you actually looking to start in his absence in a couple of weeks?
I think I've got either Isles, Jacobs, or Hibbert is going to be the ones that I'll start with. So just be one of those. And I think every man his dog has Dane Swan. So those kind of injuries really don't bother me. I mean, it's pretty in my logic, it's pretty obvious. If it's 1 or 2 weeks altitude training, he might come back with a decent fitness base and he might have sobered up from his post-season hangover, so hopefully you'll come back a new man and go back to scoring his 150s. So I mean,
well, I hope he doesn't come back with a full face tattoo like the other guy when they hang over, or like a split tongue or something, or whatever the hell they get up to over there. But perhaps he'll be filming the Hangover 3 in Arizona. Maybe that's where they'll do it. Molly, I guess there was an analysis done by the Fantasy Footy Club that said that that very few of the top 1,000, of course, most of them had Sandilands, but very few of them actually traded him out last week. So do you feel like this is going to be the same with Swan, that there's going to be only a very small minority who might be forced into it by the structure of their side, that will be the only circumstance where a good team would actually trade out Swan?
Yeah, no, I really think that is the case, that it's just not worth doing unless there's someone else you're missing and you're going to jump onto them. You know, if you're going to pick up Ablett or as I say, even if you didn't have Pendlebury, I can't see it being the best trade anyway, because he's going to have the bye. You know, if you're missing Boyd, maybe that would be worth doing, but I just don't see it as good planning myself.
You've got way too many trades if you're considering trading out Dane Swan. You've got way too many trades in your hand, I think, personally.
All right. Now, just to finish out on Collingwood Tarquin, John McCarthy is on the bubble this week. He has a break-even of minus 36. He's averaging 82, and his price is just under 160,000 in Dream Team. Now, that's a tricky price. That's normally the price only reserved for, you know, top three draft picks. Can you see any scenario where someone would get a McCarthy into their team? Because, of course, you'd have to trade him out again afterwards, but is there any way you could see someone getting into McCarthy into their team?
No.
No? Even score. I mean, he's scoring like a darling, and you're getting him, if you went say from a darling to him, you'd be making 100,000, 150,000. I think it'd be actually be more close to 120, I suppose, thousand. So you couldn't see McCarthy being an eighth forward, for instance.
But I mean, I guess if you're not considering Mzungu or Green, then maybe McCarthy. But I mean, is McCarthy locked into the best 21/22? I mean, I can't even say for sure that he is locked in for that. So I mean, what's the point? You might, when you're trading down to players at the moment, you're trading them down for, I think, job security is worth more than their scoring potential. So his job security in my eyes is average at best. So To me, it's irrelevant. I'd prefer someone like Mzungu, where, you know, he's in the best 21. And Green, I think, is a bit closer, but maybe not wonderful, but still a bit closer. Mm. So, yeah, I'm not sure I'd consider.
No, well, I got asked in the chat, so I thought I should put his name up. And he does have, you know, some good numbers.
Plus, McCarthy is a mid, too. Mm. So.
All right, well, I just thought I'd raise it. Now, on the other side of that game, Molly, Dean Cox. I was very happy with making Dean Cox my captain. We tend to forget sometimes that Dean Cox used to be a gun captain option. Now, in this current 3 or 4 week period where Dane Swan is not your lock-in captain, is Cox the most reliable, you know, safe, conservative option as a captain that you could get, especially with them playing Gold Coast this week? I believe Calvin had him as his number two captain option. I believe he's been quoted in the media saying he's looking forward to taking on Zach Smith, so he's up for the game. How much can you rely on Dean Cox this week and also for the next 2 or 3 weeks while Dane Swan is out?
Oh, you could rely on him. I personally don't like to do it myself, but it's not the worst decision in the world, depending on who plays. But, you know, he's had injury concerns in the past, so I think you would hope to have a better midfield option than Cox. You know, like for me, I've got Boyd or Bartel as possible options, although Bartel hasn't been scoring well. I would be looking at Boyd before I'll be looking at Cox myself.
Now, Tarquin, this is one of the defining, flavours of the game, is whether you're a coach who likes to lock in midfielders every week for a captain, or whether you're prepared to go outside the midfield and look at maybe a Steve Johnson, of course, who scored 170 last week, or a Goddard who might score 150, or a Gibbs, I suppose, in the back line. Are you one of those coaches who wants to have a midfielder every week because you know they're the highest scoring position, or are you prepared to take on a Cox, for instance?
If I had my time again, I'd be a lock-in midfielder because I've picked Chapman twice and he's been average. I picked Chapman last week because I thought he'll torch Gold Coast and kick all these goals. And, it was Steve Johnson that did that instead. So, I'd be locking in a Selwood, Boyd, Mark Murphy instead. In all honesty, that's just, I don't know why. What got over me to pick Chapman twice?
Mm.
But, yeah, I'm a midfielder from that one.
All right. Now, we'll move on to the Bulldogs and the Hawks game. Now, the question going into me for this game, Molly, was will the Hawks do to the Bulldogs midfield what they had done to the previous three opponents that they had faced in terms of really locking down their fantasy scoring? And so it actually played out that way, that the Hawks shared it around themselves to a ludicrous extent, and I think it was what was it? They more than doubled their mark tally, and it was only Boyd and Griffin who managed to get anywhere close to a decent fantasy score. Now, I mean, obviously you would have been watching that game. I watched Boyd, and he got, you know, he was quiet early when the Hawks, you know, took that 5-goal lead, and I didn't think his possessions were all that damaging. But the one thing that surprised me out of that game, Ollie, was that the Bulldogs actually smashed the Hawks in clearances. Now, this is something which hadn't happened the previous 3 weeks. Well, the Hawks had been dominating the clearances, but the Bulldogs actually won the clearance count. I think it was 40-28. So was that the fact that Minson was beating Bailey, or was it that the Bulldogs inside midfielders were doing such a great job? I mean, Cross didn't have a huge amount of numbers himself. Of course, he did tag Mitchell in the second half. What was the what was the reason that the Bulldog midfielders did so poorly, even though they were winning a lot of the clearances?
I think it was just the easy ball around the ground that they weren't getting. So that really hurt them. That, you know, there was an easy ball. All the ball off the back line was hard fought, and they just seemed to be turning it over in the midfield. So I think that's what really hurt their scoring.
Now, Tarquin, did you see that game on Foxtel?
I watched a part of it, but it's, you know, it's other than enjoying suckling, taking plenty of cheapies in the back line, sort of Bowden style. Yeah, it's quite a boring game, so I didn't watch too much of it, in all honesty.
Well, I found it interesting because obviously I was, you know, it was my team winning. But apart from that, I thought it was interesting tactically because Hawthorn found a different way to win, and it was, I mean, people have been talking up the Hawks. I didn't think that was actually as much to do with the Hawthorn game style. I thought that was actually the problem with the Bulldogs, because that Bulldog forward line refuses to chase. They only run one way. And players like Gene Siracusa and Higgins, Murphy was up in that forward line a lot, Williams didn't do a lot of tackling. None of them do a whole lot of tackling, and none of them do a whole lot of chasing. And I think the reason that the Hawks were able to get so many marks and basically share the ball amongst themselves across the half forward line was that the Bulldogs refused. Well, I'm not sure whether it was they refused or they were they were told by the coach to zone back and basically flood back into the back line, but they were just not able to provide a link between half forward, or between their back line and half forward. There was no Grant, of course. It proved to me, I think, that Grant is actually one of the most important structural players in that side, because they need someone, and Jones is obviously not the answer, to provide that link, that Riewoldt-type link between, you know, in the midfield. And they just had no one there to do it. I mean, Murphy got one mark for the whole game. It seemed to be much more of a the problem with the Bulldogs than the Hawks being so dominant. It was actually, they were allowed to play that way by the Bulldogs being so one way and so lazy. I mean, do you think I'm on the right track there, Tarquin?
Yeah, I couldn't picture a Collingwood, Carlton, Essendon, sort of Eagles, one of those sort of top Geelong team allowing Hawthorn to get away with playing kick to kick in the back line.
Mm.
That if you kick backwards a bit, they'd push up their press up forward. If you kick back again, they push it up forward, and before you know it, you'd be sitting in your back line going, okay, geez, the whole press is pushed forward. Bulldogs, for whatever reason, they've lost the plot, and they just said, okay, they just basically allowed them, and Hawthorn just kicked it around. We've got some good ball users, you know, Guerra's, your Sucklings, sort of all those guys, and Hodge. They just had a field day. No pressure, take a mark, go back, spot up a guy. It was just disheartening if I was a Bulldog supporter about how bad their efforts were, in all honesty.
So, I mean, you look at their fantasy scores, Molly, and it was basically just Boyd and Griffin winning clearances, and every other part of their game was just terrible. Do you think that, and obviously Minson did all right, obviously, with the hit-outs. Now, do you think they can actually turn that around? I mean, there's not a whole lot of fantasy premiums in that side, obviously, Boyd and Higgins. Do you think there's actually any, Higgins is arguable as well, do you think there's actually any fantasy premiums other than Boyd that will actually come out of that side in the second half of the year, or is the whole team shot to hell?
Yeah, no, I wouldn't be too confident in any of them
any of them at all to really be premiums, especially. I mean, Chia is always an interesting one. He can put up some big scores, but puts in some little ones. So I really think it's Boyd and Daylight after that. It, you know, maybe Cross, but, you know, two buys means you're not going to pick up, you know, two premiums in that area.
Mm. All right. Now, time for Hawk Talk. Go on, Tarquin.
I still think maybe if Brian Lake builds up his fitness base, you've got some trades to burn. Maybe five rounds to go, sitting with about four trades, no long-term injuries. You might turn him into a back, seventh or eighth back. You might get him at a bargain price, you know. And if he comes good, oh, who knows? There'll be plenty of ball down that area, so he'll take some marks. But Lake, I'd consider him way later, you know. We've got trades to burn. Might be a difference maker kind of picking him up.
Just looking at his price, he's 315 now in Dream Team, man, with a break even of 157. What sort of price would you be wanting to pick him up at? How close can he get? Can he get to 250, for instance, Tarquin?
I reckon he's heading there. I can see it could be like, you know, Broughton and Duffy if they went down that way, and I think Lake could head down there. And if he lifts his fitness base, he's a sort of 85 plus 90 scorer. So you know, you could almost turn on a Dugan or a Dugan, someone like that. I mean, even Ottens, if you still got him, or a Stanley, maybe later. Stanley might sort of lose a bit of his hard work and might be a straight over swap.
Well, the way he's going, you could almost do a Josh Toy straight swap for him, the way he's hitting.
I guess in that sort of sense, someone to watch who sort of fits this was Hodge. I mean, once he got fit and started training in the last couple of weeks, his scores have skyrocketed. So it's a matter of watching and seeing if he looks like he's going to turn the corner and get his fitness right.
Mm. All right. Well, let us start Hawk Talk, Molly. Now, there were a couple of players I want to speak about. Now, Max Bailey, of course, is on the bubble this week. Now, the question has been asked during the week about the Hawks ruck stocks and about what's going to happen to that over the second half of the year. The way I see it, Molly, is that you can have Bailey or Renouf, and you can have Roughhead or Hale. And I could see Roughhead being rested for probably the Gold Coast games and Hale coming in, and maybe one or two others after in between if he gets a bit sore. But I think the Hawks will think that they need to have either, well, hopefully they'll have Bailey and Renouf fit, but one of them fit for finals. But I don't think you can actually have three of them in the one side. Are you with me on that one?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be tricky what happens here. I personally still think Renouf is the best of them, but Hale does give you that versatility, and Bailey is probably the best tap ruckman of them. But yeah, I think as soon as Renouf's fit, he'll come back in, and I don't think that's this week.
So you think Bailey is a better tap ruckman than Renouf?
Just at the taps, yeah. But I think Renouf still gives you a bit more in aggression and the likes.
But didn't Minson get smashed? I mean, no, didn't Minson smash Bailey in the hitouts this week? Doesn't that tell you something about how Bailey? I mean, he had a hot start, but I mean, he's getting beaten by Minson, who's not the greatest ruckman in the world. I mean, he was supposed to be having a good day because there was no Hudson there. Well, isn't that a bit of a knock against Bailey?
I guess it is. I wasn't aware of that. I mean, he looked like he had some good taps, and he had some good taps the first week. But yeah, I think he's got some way to go. He's, you know, these few games have been good for him to get his confidence back up. He's got through them, which is fantastic. So I would probably like to see, I really, as I say, I'm a Renouf fan. I'd like to see Renouf back in the side and get Bailey back in the VFL for a bit.
Just to round that off, Bailey did actually get more hitouts than Minson. It was a 19-15, but Bailey also had four frees against, which I'm guessing pretty much all of those would have been in the ruck, so that would have been another few clearances. And Bailey's got nine possessions around the ground as opposed to Minson's 17. So, I mean, you know, basically the Bulldogs dominated. Well, they certainly led by a fair way in the clearances, which is something that hasn't happened recently. So Bailey's job security, Molly. I guess this is for fantasy purposes. That's what we really need to concentrate on. How many games does he play, and how many games does Renouf play in the second half of the season?
I don't see Bailey as the answer. I know a lot of Hawks fans do, but I'm not sure if that's just the aura of the, you know, even though he's been around the Hawks for a while, the, you know, the shiny new object type thing where it's, you know, I find fans just want to get the new guys in there, whether they're good enough to play or not. So I personally would rather see Renouf in the side than Bailey, and I think that's the way it will happen.
Mm. All right. Now, also at the Hawks, Sam Mitchell. Now, there was a very strange topic raised on, I think, believe it was the famous DT coaches thread on Big Footy during the week, Molly. You were in the thick of this, about Sam Mitchell and the effect on his fantasy output of him being the new father of twins. Now, do you believe all this rubbish about how he's so tired from taking care of the twins, plus, of course, his other kid who's about one or two, that he's got no time, no energy left for football? Or, I mean, doesn't the fact that he scored 90 in that first half of the Bulldogs game sort of put that, you know, knock that into a cocked hat?
Yeah, no, I think it's more about the tag and whether he'll keep getting that tag or whether Hodge and some of the back guys will draw tags and take them away from him. So I think I started the conversation that led to that, but my conversation on Mitchell was more looking at Mitchell compared to, let's say, a Mark Murphy, who is up now, but will he maintain it? And, you know, Mitchell's had, you know, two bad games that's brought his price down. You know, is he a better option? Is he a better unique to a degree in the, if you're looking to go to the top? You know, if you take Mark Murphy, a lot of the top teams are going to have him. So if he starts to get tagged and his price is scoring drops, you know, will you be better to be on someone like Mitchell, who not as many people will be on, and will give you a chance to, you know, if you're like me in the 4,000s, a chance to make up a few points, or is it just more of a risk and I should be covering them with a Murphy?
Well, Tarquin has to head off. He's about as whipped as Sam Mitchell is by Mrs. Tarquin. So, look, just before you go, Tarquin. So, I suppose it sounds like you can sympathise a bit with Sam Mitchell with his young family. I don't think you're a father yet, but I'm sure you'll get there at some stage. So, do you believe this rubbish about Sam Mitchell and his young family, or I suppose you can probably sympathise with the strictures of home life and what it allows you to do and not to do?
Yeah, I actually never thought about that concept, but yeah, it does make sense. You know, twins, I doubt it you'd get much sleep, but I do think it's a tagging issue. But, you know, maybe got his 90 points and around half time and said, oh, that's it, I'm a bit tired now, I'm going to have a rest.
So perhaps you're better equipped to answer this than we are as, you know, as Hawthorn fans. If you look at that Hawthorn midfield, now why do you think it is that Mitchell has been tagged in the last 3 weeks over a Hodge or a Rioli or a Burgoyne?
It's the typical sort of, think of like the peer situation for Port Adelaide. When you tag a Mitchell, you can force him to have an average game. You tag a Luke Hodge, you tag a sort of a Chris Judd, you tag a Selwood, and what do you get? You still get the same output for them, not a lot different. Where if you tag a Mitchell, you can actually reduce his output. You can make him sort of not as damaging. But you let Mitchell run loose, he dominates. So if you tag Hodge, he still does good. And you don't tag Mitchell, he dominates. So it's one of those things where you got to sort of work out which guy you can tag, sort of like with Fremantle. You tag Hill, and you basically you nullify him out of the game. But if you tag someone like a Barlow back when he was playing, or a Pavlich, you don't sort of get as good of an effort. So I think that's the main reason as well.
That's funny you say that, because I think we were talking a couple of weeks ago, Molly, about how my recollection of Hodge when he gets tagged is actually he does have poor games when he gets tagged. He certainly did last year. So maybe it's just a factor of fitness that Sam Mitchell's not feeling all that well at the moment, and thus you know it's not necessarily hurt factor that they're tagging you for. It's the fact that he will struggle under a tag physically.
Yeah, I also think that he was hurt by that game style. I mean, everyone's talking about the Hawks game style, but it seemed to be more prevalent in the third and fourth quarters than it was in the first and seconds. So I wonder whether he was just hurt by the fact that, you know, he did get tagged and that game style changed. It was less stoppages and the likes where he normally does a lot of his best work. You know, he does quite well in the open as well, or you know, running in the more mid, you know, in the semi-congested, you know, run of the play areas. But when it turned to, you know, the chip around the back line, then there was no ball for him because he wasn't in the back line. It was the backman. So, you know, that could also have played a factor in it. And you know, I'm not sure that's going to happen for the rest of the, you know, the rest of the season, that they're going to play that same style. I mean, you know, we like to talk about the goldfish memory of the commentators. And I think there's a degree of that, that just because the Hawks have played that way the last two games doesn't mean that they're going to play that style always, is my opinion.
Well, Tarquin, you've had to suffer through Hawk Talk, as the listeners have to do, but you had to do it firsthand, so I apologise for that, but we do have to do it every week, especially when Hawthorn wins, so we do like to talk about them. But anyway, thank you, Tarquin, for coming on, and send my thanks also to Mrs. Tarquin for putting up with you and racking off out of the kitchen, as it sounded like she did for most of the show. So thank you to you, Tarquin.
No, cheers for having me on the show. It was, good fun as always, and yeah, I'd like to say, just bring it back to Hawk Talk for just half a second. I'm still kicking myself that I actually considered Hodge about 2 weeks ago. Yeah. And I thought, oh, no, I'll wait till see Achilles is better. And then lo and behold, bang, bang. And so, yes, I think some people did jump on him, and I tipped my hat. And I'm also, I mean, if I didn't already have a stocked midfield, I'd also consider Mitchell as well, because I think he's got some of his bad games out of the way.
All right, thanks to you, Tarquin, and also to you, Molly, for your sterling work, as always, over 129 shows. That's a lot of shows. And we shall see everyone, and before I start rabbiting on too much, that will be it this week for the Coach's Box, and thanks to everyone out there on the chat at fanfooty.com.au/video, and we shall see you guys next week.
See you guys.
See you guys.